Well, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for that beautiful music, Renee. She seems to never, ever hit a sour note. Ever. Well, it's good to see you all again. It's been quite a while. Thought I might come in here today and find that I'd forgotten some of your names. Time's not a factor in that. I could forget your names anyway. But my wife and I haven't been here for a while. We were in Arizona visiting our son and his wife and children, our grandchildren, for 2 weeks. Well, we weren't there for 2 weeks. We were there for two Sabbaths. We attended services down there on January 17th and 24th in the Phoenix East congregation. We expected to be back last week, back here, and shortly after we got home, I got a call from Mr. Luker. He said, Warren, I need you to go up to see Dwully and speak. And so that means it's been 4 weeks since we've seen any of you. Before that, remember we were 2 weeks in that other hall. 2 weeks before that, we had no services. So for my wife and me, this is the first time we've been here since December 13th. Well, anyway, Mr. Luker has encouraged Steve and me to occasionally speak on some of our basic doctrinal subjects, and that's what I'm going to do today. There's two reasons why I picked this one. One is because for some time I've been thinking about my own shortcomings in this area. And also, to go back a little bit in time, my wife and I had the opportunity this year to attend the Feast of Tabernacles in St. Lucia. And there we met up again with a couple that we'd met there in 2005. This is a man and his wife who are a part of what makes the feast go there in St. Lucia. But we were in a discussion over breakfast one morning, and this man asked, why isn't more said about the Sabbath in the church today? Shouldn't we be preaching more about this distinguishing doctrine? I guess the reason it was on his mind was that he was going to be speaking on the Sabbath during the feast, and he was going to be speaking on the subject of the Sabbath on the Sabbath during the feast. The tack he was taking and the aspect of the Sabbath that he spoke on is not the one I'm going to be taking today. I may just allude to it briefly. But some of you will find this a bit repetitious, because you may think, well, you know, I've been keeping the Sabbath for decades. I know all about it. You will also hear me repeat myself probably a number of times during the sermon for a good reason. But it says in the second epistle of Peter, Peter is speaking here to the church, and he says in verse 12, therefore I will not be negligent to remind you always of these things, though you know them and are established in the present truth. Yes, I think it is right, as long as I am in this tent, to stir you up by reminding you. In verse 15, he says, moreover, I will be careful to ensure that you always have a reminder of these things after my decease. And various commentaries will even talk about how God repeats himself in the Bible, particularly in the Old Testament. That's how he shows that something is important. That's how he gives emphasis to certain things. So there, this may seem repetitious to some of you who've been around a while, but repetition is good. Repetition is our friend. It's not good to forget. We should always be reminded of certain things, especially the basics. Now, one of the problems in the church throughout history has been just that, that people over a course of time will begin to forget certain things. I can remember the late Herbert W. Armstrong talking about how in the 1920s, when he came in touch with what he thought had to be the Church of God, it was the only body that could be, he was amazed at how much they didn't know. Already in his short Christian life at that time. He had learned a great deal more than they had, evidently, from the Bible. And that's why they began to listen to him. They were amazed what they could learn. Now, we dare not forget certain things. But hopefully today, although for some this may be a repetition, maybe the tack I will be taking here will be just enough different that it'll enable us to see the subject from a little bit different perspective. And this may encourage us to give more thought and effort to our own personal preparation for the Sabbath day. Now, by way of background, I want to take us back to Genesis chapter 1. Please turn to Genesis chapter 1. There's an important distinction here that I want to make. In Genesis chapter 1, it says, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth." Then we come to verse 2, a strange verse. The earth became chaos. It went into a state of chaos and confusion. Now, we know from other scriptures that God didn't create it that way. It got that way. There's a space of time here, and those of us who've been around for a while know that we need to insert between verse 1 and verse 2, Isaiah 14 and Ezekiel 28, that tells us about the rebellion of Satan. Then, in verse 3, it says, "Then God said, let there be light, and there was light." God here begins the recreation or the refurbishing of the earth to make it suitable for man's habitation. It says, "God saw the light that it was good." The light was good. God called the light day, the darkness he called night, and there you have the first day. On the second day, he divided the waters above from the waters below. On the third day, the dry land appears. God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters he called seas. And God saw that it was good. It was good. He also created and caused the grass to begin to grow, and the fruit trees. And in the latter part of verse 12, it says, "And God saw that it was good." Then God said, "Let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and seasons and for days and years." So here we have the assignment of the heavenly bodies, the sun to rule the day, the moon to rule the night, and also the stars. And in verse 18, the latter part of the verse, it says, "And God saw that it was good." It was good. On the fifth day, he filled the seas with fish and the air with birds. And verse 21 says, "And God saw that it was good." On the sixth day, he created land animals. And in the latter part of verse 25, it says, "And God saw that it was good." And then also on the sixth day, God said, "Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness." And so he created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him male and female. And then in verse 31, it says, "Then God saw everything that he had made, and indeed it was very good." So we see that light is good. Earth is good. Fruit trees, good. Heavenly bodies, good. Animals, good. Man and woman, good to very good. Now we come to chapter 2. Beginning in verse 1. "Thus the heavens and the earth and all the host of them were finished. And on the seventh day God ended his work which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had done. Then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he rested from all his work which God had created and made." So after the first 6 days of recreating God rested on the seventh day. Later on, we find this is the cycle he's going to call a week. But on that seventh day of that cycle, he rested. Now, the Hebrew word for rested is Shabbat, the word from which we get the word Sabbath. So God Shabbated on that day. That's S-H-A-B-A-T-H, for those of you who want to write that down in your notes. So God rested on the seventh day. Verse 3, it says, then God blessed the seventh day. Now that word blessed, and by the way, this is going to be a little bit of a study in Hebrew and Greek. I'm neither a Hebrew nor a Greek scholar, but thanks to the many different Bible references we have today, it's possible for us to look up words in the Bible in the original languages, and we can learn a great deal that way. This Hebrew word is barak. Now, the Greek equivalent is eulogio. I mention that because that throws a bit more light on it. Eulogio. It literally means good word. You, good, logio, word. So God had a good word for the seventh day. So light is good, earth is good, heavenly bodies good, man and woman very good. The seventh day also is good, but there's something more. In addition, he adds in verse 3 the conjunction and sanctified it. He sanctified the seventh day. The Hebrew word for sanctified is kadosh. Now this word, this is the first use of this word in the Bible. It is generally translated holy. But if you do a little study, a little research into the meaning of this word, you'll find that it means to pronounce, to observe, to dedicate as pure, clean, holy, sacred. A secondary meaning is that it is separated from the profane. Now notice here there is a distinction. Light is good. The Sabbath is holy. Earth is good. The Sabbath is holy. Heavenly bodies, good. Sabbath, holy. Animal life, good. The Sabbath, holy. Male and female, good to very good. The Sabbath is holy. I say it that way for emphasis, to make us think. Why did he sanctify the seventh day? Why not the first or the sixth? Let's go back for a moment to chapter 1 and verse 14. God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and seasons and for days and years. Now this word seasons here does not mean spring, summer, fall, winter, those kind of seasons. That's a different Hebrew word. This is Hebrew mohadim, a word that is oftentimes connected with the holy days. The root idea of this word is to keep an appointment. Every seventh day, God has an appointment with humans on earth. God has pronounced the seventh day as pure, clean, holy, sacred. God then also has an appointment. He wants us to observe the seventh day as pure, clean, holy, sacred. And there is a dedication on God's part and should be on our part as well to that which is pure, clean, holy, sacred. Why? What's the purpose? To begin to answer that, let's turn to Exodus chapter 3. In Exodus chapter 3, it says, Now Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the back of the desert and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire from the midst of a bush. So he looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire, but the bush was not consumed. So Moses says, I better check this out. Verse 4, So when the Lord saw that he turned aside to look, God called to him from the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses, and he said, Here I am. Then he said, Do not draw near this place. Take your sandals off. Take your shoes off your feet, for the place where you stand is holy ground. Take your shoes off. Now, that shouldn't be too hard for us to understand. A lot of other religions, particularly those who we might think of as old, ancient religions, they tend to do this literally in their worship. Now, I've never been in a mosque, but I watch TV, I read, I see pictures, I've been through school. We know that Muslims take their shoes off when entering a mosque to render worship to their God, Allah, because this shows respect. You go into a mosque, you'll see all these shoes lined up against the wall. And you've probably seen on television or in magazines pictures of Muslim people all lined up without shoes on, and they're kneeling and bent over, their posteriors pointing at the air, their faces down on the ground. This is the way they show respect to their God. By point of analogy, taking our shoes off, that which is holy, is to show respect. Show respect not only to the day, but to God. It says here in verse 6, Moreover, he said, God speaking, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God. So here he now is told about God. So on holy ground, we learn about God. Later on in this chapter, God reveals to Moses the name he is going to use when he covenants a relationship with the children of Israel, the Tetragrammaton Yahweh, in verses 13 to 15. And that he is now about to establish a relationship with the children of Israel, the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But the point here is show respect to that which is holy. The Sabbath is holy. Show respect and learn about God. Too many times, we've taken a rather casual, cavalier approach to the Sabbath day. And I include myself in that. As I said earlier, that was part of what prompted this sermon. I've given a lot of thought to this. I haven't always been all that satisfied with my preparation for the Sabbath. But this time is holy, and God wants us to take our shoes off of this time. Now, with that background, we come to Exodus 16. The children of Israel are on their way to the Promised Land. This is about 1 month after the Exodus. They haven't yet reached Sinai. But let's begin reading in verse 4. Then the Lord said to Moses, Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain quota every day that I may test them whether they will walk in my law or not. And it shall be on the sixth day that they shall prepare what they bring in, and it shall be twice as much as they gather daily. If they gathered it and held it over on any other day, it would stink and breed worms. Verse 22, and so it was on the sixth day that they gathered twice as much bread, two omers for each one, and all the rulers of the congregation came and told Moses. Then he said to them, this is what the Lord has said, tomorrow is a Sabbath rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. Bake what you will bake today, and boil what you will boil, and lay up for yourselves all that remains to be kept until morning. Several things here to point out. The Sabbath was kept before it was formally commanded at Sinai. Therefore, it could not have been first introduced as part of the Old Covenant. It was kept, observed prior to the institution of the Old Covenant. Secondly, the Sabbath follows the sixth day. The cycle continues. It is the seventh day. The sixth day is used to prepare for the Sabbath, as we saw back in verse 5. It shall be on the sixth day that they shall prepare what they bring in, and it shall be twice as much as they gather daily. And they would have it ready and prepared for the next day, so they wouldn't have to go out and gather it the next day. The Hebrew word for prepare here means to establish, fix, order, be ready. The sixth day is a time to prepare to be ready, to fix, to order things before the seventh day comes. And another thing here, once again, it indicates the Sabbath is kadash. It is holy. Notice also what it says. In verse 23, lost my place there for a minute. In verse 23, then he said to them, this is what the Lord has said, tomorrow is a Sabbath rest. Here it is. Tomorrow is a Sabbath rest, a holy Sabbath, preposition to the Lord. It is to the Lord. He must be the focus on this day. It is a Sabbath rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. Also, it refers here to the fact that it is a day of rest. Rest means refraining from work, ceasing from labor. In this case, refraining from going out and gathering manna. But notice verses 24 to 28. So they laid it up till morning, as Moses commanded, and it did not stink, nor were there any worms in it. Then Moses said, eat that today, for today is a Sabbath to the Lord. Today you will not find it in the field. 6 days you shall gather it, but on the seventh day, which is the Sabbath, there will be none. Now it happened that some of the people went out on the seventh day to gather, but they found none. And the Lord said to Moses, how long do you refuse to keep my commandments and my laws? Point. The Sabbath is a test whether or not man will obey God. Refusal to keep the seventh day Sabbath means a refusal to obey God, His laws, His commandments. God demands that we live a certain way. Keeping the Sabbath day holy proves we're living, willing to live that certain way. So observance of the Sabbath is crucial to a person who believes in and follows God. Now we come to commandment number 4 in Exodus 20. In Exodus 20, beginning in verse 8, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. That's good. But the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it You shall do no work, you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your manservant, nor your maidservant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger who is within your gates, for, and here it harkens right back to Genesis 2, in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. Twice here we have the word Kadosh. Verse 8 and verse 11. The seventh day is holy. Show respect. Take your shoes off. You have 144 hours to do your thing. I am commanding you to take your shoes off of 24 hours. Now in the Hebrew, the wording here, in Hebrew, if you read it, this commandment in the Hebrew, it consists of 55 words, making it the longest and most detailed of all of the commandments when you read it in the Hebrew. In Deuteronomy 5, the parallel, the commandment there consists of 64 words. Now, an implication of this is that this commandment will be broken more often. Therefore, it necessitates more instruction. Some people break this or that commandment. Some people break the commandments against murder, some against stealing, some against adultery. Many do not. But most of the human race does break this one commandment. Only the very few do not. It is as if we should teach our children, don't run out into the street. Don't play with matches. Don't touch the hot stove. Simple, straightforward commands, and we have those kind. Do not commit murder. Do not steal. Do not commit adultery. But this one is much longer and more involved. It's like saying, don't touch that hot stove. I care about you. I don't want you to get hurt. It's hot. You'll get burned. I know. I touched it. I got burned. I don't want that to happen to you. I care about you. So don't touch the hot stove. You see, it's longer and more detailed. Now the word remember here, well, that tells us one thing right up front. He wasn't introducing something new. It's something that already existed. But the word remember pertains both to the past and to the future. When he says remember regarding the past, that shows the Sabbath was not just introduced at Sinai. It was already there. Nor was it introduced in the wilderness in Exodus 16. The context itself carries us all the way back to creation. The Sabbath was introduced in Genesis 2, according to Exodus 20, verse 11. Not only that, it carries us into the future when he says, remember and keep it holy. You do not only observe the Sabbath right now, this once, but you keep on observing it as holy. Every seventh day is holy. Now let's look at the parallel in Deuteronomy 5. In Deuteronomy 5, it says, beginning in verse 12, observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy, as the Lord your God commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall not do any work, you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your manservant, nor your maidservant, nor your ox, nor your donkey, nor any of your cattle, nor your stranger who is within your gates, that your manservant and your maidservant may rest as well as you. and remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out from there by a mighty hand and by an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. Now, the word observe here, Hebrew shama, means to hedge about with thorns, to guard, to protect, to keep. It kind of conjures up the image of, say, a primitive village or camp among, we might say, Aboriginal people, in which the village or the camp is hedged about with pointed sticks, bamboo, whatever, in order to keep lions out, to protect the village from the predator. The hedge is tall enough so that the lion can't jump over it. And the sticks point outward, and they're sharpened. Obviously, the idea here is that we are to hedge about this 24-hour period and not allow anything foreign coming in. This is holy time. We need to guard it, keep it, protect it. The focus in verse 14 is on rest. And notice it shows that the entire household, including the manservant and the maidservant, is to rest. The point here is that there is a leveling of the field in society between the classes. Rest from work and rest or freedom from class structure when it comes to commandment number 4. Your servants must be allowed to cease from work as well as you. Why? 2 reasons. Verse 15, and remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and that the Lord God brought you out from there by a mighty hand and by an outstretched arm. They had been slaves. God saved them. He gave them rest from their slavery, and he would give them rest in the promised land. So the Sabbath day would be a matter of remembering their God as Savior, who had given them rest from slavery, freedom from bondage. Because of this, your servants should rest. The second reason, let's look back at Exodus 23. Exodus 23, verse 12. 6 days you shall do your work, and on the seventh day you shall rest, that your ox and your donkey may rest, and the son of your maidservant and the stranger may be refreshed. Refreshed. In the original Hebrew, it means to breathe or be refreshed. The seventh day is the pause that refreshes. There was a commercial years ago, I think it was for 7-Up or something like that, described a soft drink as the pause that refreshes. Well, God is here saying the Sabbath day is the pause that refreshes as we breathe a sigh of relief. A pause that refreshes not only for you, but for your servants, even for the animals. So then how, pray tell, can it not be for mankind? Christ said in Mark 2:27, the Sabbath was made for man. In the Greek, that's anthropos, man. That's where we get words like anthropology and anthropomorphic. It's not just for the Jews. It's not just for Israel. It's for anthropos. That means human beings. All humanity, every seventh day, should experience that sigh of relief. The pause that refreshes so you can go into the next 6 days. Of course, there's more to it than that. There is other significance. The rest that they were entering into was the promised land, which portrays the rest we are to go into, the kingdom of God. That was the emphasis of the Sabbath sermon in St. Lucia. But I won't go into that here. So this commandment is a detailed command showing that he wants us to remember not only creation, but keep on remembering and observing it on into the future. Hedge it about. Take your shoes off of it. Show respect for it. Rest and be refreshed. Now let's go to Exodus 31. Some of what is in this passage here is kind of a repetition of things in Exodus 16 and Exodus 20 and Deuteronomy 5, but there's some new additional material as well. Beginning in verse 12 of Exodus 31, "And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Speak also to the children of Israel, saying, Surely my Sabbath you shall keep, for it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Lord who sanctifies you. You shall keep the Sabbath, therefore, for it is holy to you. Anyone who profanes it shall surely be put to death, for whoever does any work on it, that person shall be cut off from among his people." And we'll see again here in verse 15 what it means to be cut off from your people. And it also shows just how important it is to God when he says something is holy. "Work shall be done for 6 days, but the seventh is a Sabbath of rest, holy to the Lord. Whoever does any work on the Sabbath day, he shall surely be put to death." You understand that in ancient Israel, you could kill somebody, accidentally, of course, and you could flee to a city of refuge and live out the rest of your life, or until the high priest died, and then you could go back to your city. But right across the board, there's this penalty for breaking the Sabbath. You were to be put to death. Verse 16, "Therefore the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations as a perpetual covenant. It is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed." We see here that this is a covenant of identity. It identifies God to his people, and it identifies his people to him. Who are his people? Those he sets apart, who keep his Sabbath holy. Now, this is different from the old covenant. Some people think it's just a restatement of the old covenant, or somehow an addendum to it. The old covenant gave way to the new. This covenant is perpetual, it says in verse 16. The Hebrew word for perpetual is olam, O-L-A-M. It means age-lasting or forever, and is so translated in verse 17. And there is nothing in the Bible to indicate that this has ever been abrogated. Now some argue, well, this is only a covenant God made with the children of Israel. Well, in Galatians 6, in the New Testament era, we're dealing with the Israel of God, the church, and that church keeps the Sabbath. This covenant identifies who are the people of God. Now it says it's a sign between God and his people. Now, in a number of ways, it is a sign. I don't have time to go into all of them. But, as I said, it is a sign to God. It identifies to God who are his people, those who keep his Sabbath holy, thereby acknowledging him as creator, ruler, and authority over all creation. And it's a sign to man, a sign of remembrance. It takes us back to the origin of the Sabbath day on the seventh day of recreation, identifying God as that creator. It's a sign of knowledge, a sign that imparted to Israel the knowledge that Yahweh was her God and that her God sanctifies his people, which means he makes them holy. and it's a sign of separation. The Sabbath was a sign given to his people to separate them from the rest of mankind, a distinguishing mark. It distinguishes the people of God, the people who keep the Sabbath holy, from those who are not the people of God. It is God who sanctifies his people, which means he makes them holy. But take note of this. The holiness of God's people is not because of anything in themselves or because of anything they do. It's not because of any intrinsic sterling character within them. It's not because of the good that they do. The holiness of God's people is strictly on the part of God. I sanctify you. I am the one who makes you a holy people. Now, if we move forward to the New Testament, and I said earlier that in the New Testament era, we're dealing with the Israel of God, the church. The primary term used for followers of God in Christ in the New Testament is not Christian. The word Christian only appears three times in the New Testament, twice in Acts and once I think it's in 1 Peter 2. Well, it's in 1 Peter. The word that is most often used to describe God's people in the New Testament is saints, Greek agios, holy, the Greek equivalent of the Hebrew kadash. Now this word, agios, refers primarily in three directions and in some other minor areas. I mean, it can refer to things like Jerusalem, the holy city, and that sort of thing. But primarily it refers to God. God is holy. It refers to spirit, agios pneuma, Holy Spirit, and saints. Now, Israel was a holy nation, as per Exodus 19. Who made them holy? God. What's the sign of the holy nation? Exodus 31, the Sabbath. The holy nation in the New Testament are the saints. 1 Peter 2, 9. Holy nation. Agion ethnos. What makes them holy? God. The sign of that holy nation? Exodus 31, the Sabbath. That they may know that I am the Lord who sanctifies them, makes them holy. I said a moment ago, the holiness of God's people really has nothing to do with anything intrinsic within themselves. It has really nothing to do with anything they do. Now, think back to the beginning. The distinction between what is good and what is holy. Human beings can be good. Human beings can do good things. They can show great compassion. That does not make them agios, saints, or Christian. The holiness of God's people is strictly an act of God. Now, some years ago, we were fed with a certain ploy. An effort was being made to scuttle the Sabbath. A dumbing down of Christianity was taking place. Dumbing down Christianity to simply doing good. We were told, well, other people are good. There are a lot of good people out there. Maybe you have an aunt or a grandparent, a friend who is really good. They do good things. They're charitable. They're compassionate. They may know the Bible and be able to quote the Bible better than the person sitting next to you in church. And they don't keep the Sabbath. So why should we have to keep the Sabbath? You see, it has nothing to do with whether we're good. These good people, and there are many good people still on this earth, I think that's why the curtain hasn't been rung down yet. They may call themselves Christian. But the word in Greek that's translated Christian means a follower of Jesus Christ. He kept the Sabbath, did he not? The New Testament church kept the Sabbath. Paul, as his custom was, kept the Sabbath. And if I'm part of that New Testament era, so will I. The saints, agios, are holy. Why? God made them a holy nation like Israel. The sign of a holy nation is the Sabbath, Kadosh. You can't be a saint and not keep the Sabbath. It's a contradiction in terms. Now the question comes up, and this is the one that I've contemplated for quite some time. Have we kept the Sabbath as God intended it to be kept? Do we properly prepare to keep it? And I throw that out just as food for thought. Let's turn to Isaiah 58. In Isaiah 58, we're told a little something that can give us some guidelines, some principles about how to keep the Sabbath. It says here in Isaiah 58, beginning in verse 13, if you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy day of the Lord honorable, and shall honor him, not doing your own ways, nor finding your own pleasure, nor speaking your own words, then you shall delight yourself in the Lord. And I will cause you to ride on the high hills of the earth and feed you with the heritage of Jacob your father. The mouth of the Lord has spoken. It says, if you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure. Now, here again, it's instructive to go back into the original Hebrew to find out what this means. The word pleasure comes from the Hebrew kephets, and it can be translated a number of ways, and I would urge you to look up this passage in any number of different translations. I don't have time to read all of those. But it can mean pleasure, desire, a matter or affair, things desired, will, purpose. Hence, your own business, your own affairs, your own secular pursuits, doing your own thing. The NIV, in fact, says, if you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing as you please, just doing your own thing, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy day of the Lord honorable, and shall honor him, not doing your own ways. And there again, in the original Hebrew, it's talking about our ways, and it usually involves our work, our business, our going to work, or the work itself. Nor finding your own pleasure, pursuing your business, your own interests, nor speaking your own words. And some translations and commentaries indicate that that's speaking of communication involving your work. How many times have we come to Sabbath services and somebody says, well, how was your work? And we launch into a discussion about our job, our business, our profession, and how it went that work, that week, and how, you know, what we think about that and what we're going to do different in the future and so on. But on the Sabbath, our focus is supposed to be on God. And our delight should be in the things of God. The Sabbath isn't to be a burden, it's to be a delight. Now, it's possible for it not to be a delight. The Jews in the time of Christ, they hedged it about, and this is a different meaning of that word, hedging it about, with all kinds of restrictions and made it burdensome, made it a pain. We've done the same thing at times. Now, maybe we do need to impose certain restrictions on ourselves. It gets to be a problem when we want to start imposing those on other people, others around us. But the point is not doing our own thing on the Sabbath, but focusing our attention on God. If I had time, we'd go into Isaiah 66. I urge you to do that later. What it is a prophecy that will begin to find fulfillment in the millennium after Christ returns. It says there that ultimately all the earth will observe the Sabbath. The Sabbath was instituted at creation. It was given to ancient Israel. It was kept by Jesus Christ and the apostles in the New Testament church. It will be kept after Christ returns. So how can we come to the conclusion that somehow it was suspended between the completion of the Bible and the return of Christ? God has an appointment with us on the Sabbath. It is holy time, a day of rest, a time to cease and desist from our jobs, our work, our business, our personal affairs of the previous 6 days. It also is a test to see if we will obey God or not. It should be a delight to us. We should take delight in honoring God. It's a day to be refreshed. The focus should be on God during this 24-hour period. We should honor God, not just a day. It is, after all, His Sabbath. So let's show Him respect. Take your shoes off.